Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the NSMB podcast and the first of our Coming of Age series. The Coming of Age series will feature young athletes in our sport, and the guest for the inaugural episode is Casper Woolley, a young EWS racer from Squamish who grew up ski racing. Casper first caught the eye of Brands as a young junior, after his stage results at a local race beat the fastest pro men. Since then, Casper's grown stronger on the bike, and in 2020 made heaps of noise showcasing his cornering skills in a series of short videos. His talent and hard work paid off during the 2020 Crankworx Summer Series, where he was a regular on the podium and the top Canadian EWS athlete at the events, whether an enduro or downhill race. Casper went on to close the race season with a win at the Big Mountain Enduro in Winter Park, beating Richie Roode in the process. Now part of the Yeti 1UP EWS team with Jared Graves, Casper's pitting at the races with the Yeti factory team and getting comfortable with the benefits of race day support. Being young, one might expect Casper to be all over social media, but he prefers to provide value to his partners through his racing. It's a refreshing perspective coming from a young athlete. I'm AJ Barlas. Welcome to the latest NSMB podcast and my conversation with Casper Woolley. So today's a rest day.
Yeah. Sort of Wednesday.
Does that mean Sunday? Literally nothing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah?
I might go fishing.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know. I don't, like, with the whole, all, like, health issues, I don't seem to, like, recover super well.
Yeah.
So if I, like, don't rest properly, it just, like, catches up with me so fast.
Huh.
And then I'm really doing a big, I'm doing multi-day rest kind of thing. Or just like, I just fade.
Yeah.
So pretty like hard day yesterday.
Gym and bike.
Yeah. Like did like a 30 minute circuit in the gym.
Like a HIIT thing? H-I-I-T? I don't know. High intensity.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of CrossFit-y sort of type deal. And then I'd be like, 75Ks on the road with some intervals.
Shit. So. Yeah, I saw you're in Britannia.
Yeah, because it works pretty good if I go from my house, Britannia, and pretty much gets distance without hitting the Squamish Valley Road.
Right. Which is
good. I'll do Paradise, but just like turning down Squamish is just so bad with our like wind. It just seems to like hit that road so hard.
Huh.
You like will turn around and you won't even be moving.
resistance training. That's cool. So do you ride all the way up Britannia to like the gate?
Yeah, because then you get like a good, pretty good hill climb.
Yeah. Well, the hill climb out of Britannia has got to be son of a bitch.
You get like up to the lake, down Britannia, which is, it's like, 13 minutes or so. And then, and then you climb out. So otherwise there's not a lot of hills around here, so
no,
if you do that you're like a little over 500 meters.
Taking your life into your own hands on that highway right there.
I know, it's not great.
Sketchy. Let's start this. All right, Casper, welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
How's it going?
Doing pretty good. Nice to be home for a bit here.
Yeah. How long are you around for?
I'm not totally sure. Doing a race August 14th at Winter Park.
Okay.
So
at some point you go into the US.
Yeah.
And Winter Park, you won that one last year, hey?
Yeah.
So that's gonna go back and defend your title.
Yeah, I'll give it my best shot. Probably, I don't know, my least favorite race, but seemed to do well. So yeah.
You were saying it was pedalier than you thought. It was pretty
well pedaly. I mean, once I was riding there, I could see it was going to be really pedally, but it's definitely like the most pedally enduro probably do this year.
Right.
But shit. Actually like a long shot and at altitude.
Oh, shit. And I saw Richie won. Where was he? Where was it last weekend?
Yeah, at Big Sky.
Big Sky.
Yeah, that place is super sick.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there. It's a cool little spot just nestled in the middle of nowhere. It's so cool. I didn't ride, just checked it out. Sweet. So you're off to there soon. And you just got back from Europe.
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah, it was pretty darn successful, I guess. The kind of came into the first two races, since they were like two races same week, with like not a lot of riding and just like struggling a bit. Like sometimes you can kind of just get into the flow of things and just goes well, but I don't know, I was just not getting into that rhythm.
It took a whole race weekend to get into it, hey?
Yeah, well, I wasn't even feeling that great after that race, but then we went to finale and just rode like a ton all week and started to kind of feel a bit better, and then kind of just every day I was feeling a little better and made some little setup changes, and then yeah, like I think I felt a bit more comfortable on the trails in Lituel too. They just suited me a bit better, and
yeah,
kind of all those things sort of came together. Yeah, like a little lucky with the weather at the first race, and yeah, just things kind of like went my way.
Yeah,
a lot more. So I was stoked.
That's sweet. And like you got a seventh in the first race at Lituel.
Yeah.
And then what was the second round?
13th.
13th. That's sick, eh?
Yeah.
Was that your first European EWS experience?
In Elite.
So yeah. You went over as a junior. Oh, yeah, a couple of years back. Right. Because your first year Elite, was that technically last year?
Yeah.
Okay. So what, you're 21, 22 now?
22.
Growing up, eh?
Yeah.
Cool. So you mentioned you made some changes and stuff. Like what happened to make you happier over there for that second race?
Kind of like I got a few, just like new bike and, new, like the kind of 2022 Fox suspension that I wasn't actually on last year.
Right.
So it just took like some fine tuning, like to get used to that stuff. And
it's
then
pretty hard to do in a race week, isn't it?
Yeah. And then I switched to a coil actually for Lituel, which I mean, I hadn't really had much experience on coils in the past. Like I think a lot of people think that they like beef up your bike in a way.
Right.
But I think like that might be like misinterpreted a bit, because it seems like they must work better for lighter riders.
Huh.
Just the way you can tune them, and they give you like a little more compliance and don't give you that, like there's like no ramp up really. So with me, like the bike ramps up enough on its own, like I don't really need the air spring to like add anything. So the coil just seems to work a little bit better for me, and like I can kind of get away with a bit more. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
you've always been really in our conversations in the past really in tune with your equipment. Like where do you reckon that came from?
I don't know, I've kind of had it from like a pretty young age with like all the sports I've been doing, but I think my dad's like pretty on it with that kind of thing, and probably get it from him a bit.
Yeah, right. That's cool. Cause like, so even though you're lighter, what do you weigh?
Like 143 right now.
Okay. So you're lighter, and you still ride super hard, but you still find having that lighter tune or whatever on the suspension, or you even talk about your wheels, feeling the differences between spoke counts and stuff like that. Even though you ride so hard, you find you still benefit from having that, I guess, more compliance. It's such a buzzword now, but
yeah,
more compliance out of everything.
Yeah, it seems like when stuff is a little bit harsh, then like I don't have enough weight to kind of just like push through it. So if it kind of like fights back like a bit, then I just basically have to be on the brakes more. Like I can't kind of like use the bike, like kind of work through the bike instead. So yeah, like sometimes I wish I could kind of just get on with it and like wouldn't make like such a difference, but like small, like little changes, like a click here or there will like, I mean, I'll go like seconds faster on like a longer track. Like it will, like, it'll just give me so much more confidence and kind of control. So
you say on a longer track, do you find you notice anything on shorter tracks too, or is it primarily stuff where fatigue could start to set in earlier?
I think on longer tracks, you ought to be more consistent. So like if your bike's feeling good, you just get into like a bit more rhythm, but I mean, it'll make a difference on any length, like short ones too. Just longer ones, obviously more time on the track. So bigger time gaps.
Yeah, totally. Huh. So how'd that, your second weekend, you got a 7th and a 13th, and your first weekend, do you know where you were for that two first races?
Yeah, it was 47th with like pretty mistake free race, honestly. And then second one, I definitely was riding a bit faster, but I like had a bit of a crash in the pro stages. It's like super wet and I like
slipped down. Oh, and that was a long stage, wasn't it?
It wasn't, yeah, it was like five, six minutes. Okay. It wasn't crazy, but I like slid down a bank and just like lost a bunch of time there. And then had like another crash on the main day. And like, yeah, so just kind of more like mistakes. And then, yeah, I was end up 57th there. But
You turned around quite a bit with a few changes and a bit of time on the new stuff.
Yeah, it was a big turnaround. Like, our last day of racing in Kanazai, so the second race, I got a 30th on the stage two, which was like, that was like the best. That was like pretty much like all I had.
Oh yeah.
So like 30th on there. And then like, yeah, Latuil, I think my worst stage was like a 32nd or something.
Wow. So, what was your best stage?
It was a 5th.
Wow.
So yeah, I didn't have any like absolute rocket ship stages, but
you're just consistent.
Yeah, fairly consistent in that. Like the times kind of 5 to 15 were just super tight. So I was kind of rolling in that kind of time frame most of the race.
That's cool. Huh. How did you find the trails and the tracks over there?
Yeah, as kind of everyone always says, they're quite a bit different than what we have at home, but I find, like, if you're riding good, like, you can kind of ride anything and adapt, and Latuil is, like, probably the sickest place I've been to in Europe for riding. Like, the dirt was just a bit more, like, dense like we have here, just some pretty fun corners mixed in with the really janky tight ones, but
yeah
pretty high speeds there, which is cool.
Though it looked pretty steep.
Yeah, so like you got some steep sections, and then I mean steep, so you pick up speed pretty quick.
Yeah, totally. So when you're in Europe as a junior, you were there for, well, you were getting some help from 1UP here in Squamish. What's your setup now? Like this year you were doing something with Yeti over there, right?
Yeah, I'm on their kind of like side sort of, I guess they're calling it like the satellite factory team sort of. It's like Yeti 1UP pro teams, the official title.
Okay.
But yeah, traveling with the main factory team and stuff, so getting kind of the full support over there, which is super nice.
Yeah, that's okay. So is that just you or
it's actually me and Jared Graves. He just was doing something else for those ones, but he should be I think he's gonna do Winter Park, and then he should be going to the second block of races in the fall.
Cool. So then you go from pretty minimal support as far as being at the races a couple of years ago to, it sounds like you're pitting with the Yeti team. How's that change? Like, it must've been pretty sick. Did you have someone working on your bike, like, or anything like that?
Yeah. So I had like, Sean the Yeti team mechanic working on my bike quite a bit. So yeah, I pretty much didn't have to like think about it really at all, especially for the race like weeks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was just really nice to kind of be able to just focus on my riding and the racing and not like have to worry about the bike really.
Mm.
It's kind of a big thing. Like there's just so many little things that can like go wrong, especially with the races. And
yeah,
it's nice when you're like not worried about something. Like if something breaks, like you'll be able to get it fixed. Whereas in the past it was like, okay, well I'm like,
can I limp it along?
Yeah. I'm like not going to like do this line or something like the day before the race or in practice. Cause like if this breaks, like I don't have another one. So
Sean's wrenching for everyone. Does he have help over there or?
Yeah, getting a bit of help from Shimano, but still kind of like working out how that's going to totally work. So he was wrenching for all three of us for the first couple races, which was a lot of work for him.
That's heaps of work, eh? Especially you got Richie, Sean Neer, and yourself, and then I guess Jared will be there as well.
Yeah,
later. Oh wow, that's insane. Yeti polar bear keeping it real, earning his check. That Yeti one up team, is that new this year? Does that start last year as well? Or what's the story behind that sort of setup?
Kind of started unofficially last year. Like it sort of like grew into more of a thing as the season went on, almost it felt like.
Yeah.
Like Yeti kind of really took me on sort of as the racing got going, which was really nice.
Yeah, cool.
Like now I signed like an actual like deal with Yeti for like this year and next year. So
cool.
A bit more like real deal official, I guess. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
How much did that change from year to year? Like did last year's bike pretty much represent exactly what you're riding now? Or was there any sort of major changes there?
No, it was like they're pretty identical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like you had a sick trip. Let's get into a bit more about your background and how you got into racing. The coming of age series is supposed to be a bit more talking about your younger years and sort of blasting into the stratosphere now as you are. How did you get into bikes? Like what's going on with young Casper?
Yeah, I guess like I've grown up in Squamish, like born in Vancouver, but like lived in Squamish my whole life, so it was pretty easy to get into riding. Like there definitely wasn't like as many kids ripped around as there is now.
Yeah,
like
it's nuts,
now it's like everyone, whereas it's definitely like there was like a small kind of core group of us, but like yeah, we had a good group of kids ripping around from pretty young age. And
is this just like riding around on the weekend with friends from school and stuff, or is this structured?
Yeah, it's pretty much just kind of riding around with, like, my dad was pretty into riding, so that's who got me into it. So I was like always riding with him and other dads and
kids and stuff.
Yeah,
cool. How did that sort of move into racing bikes?
I didn't really move away from it, but like went into skiing more for a while there. And then I kind of transitioned over like a few years of just sort of trying like some enduros here or there. And then it just kind of like, they're really fun, and skiing was going kind of like struggling each year with skiing. And then like every year, like try a couple, like, or for a couple years there, like try another enduro race in the summer and be like, oh, like this is like pretty sweet, like I can see how I could, if I actually like trained for this and focus, like I could be really competitive. So I think that kind of just sort of steered me in that direction. And then had like an injury in winter of 2018, or it had kind of been building for a while, but like a hamstring kind of tendonitis thing that basically I just couldn't.
With your ski racing?
Yeah. And I just like could not ski with it. Like it just was not going to happen, but like it didn't really affect me too much on the bike.
Right.
So that's where it was like, okay, well I can ride, but like skiing, like, I don't know how to like, I don't really know how to get like past this. Like it's going to take a while and I'm still dealing with it. So kind of really happy that didn't really try and continue with the skiing. Cause I think I'd just be like, would have probably gone a couple more years and just been super frustrated. Cause I mean, I've been skiing like in the winters now, but not like nearly as aggressive and stuff as like the racing thing. So I don't know if I'd be able to like ski race like hard right now either. So
it's still like, you talk about skiing pretty casually, but you were racing at probably a junior, but elite junior level, right?
Yeah. It's like hard. It's just like a lot different than riding the way the categories work, but
right.
You kind of turn elite when you're 17.
Right.
And you start collecting like points to your world ranking. And
you were racing around the world, right?
Yeah. I was mostly racing in Canada, like a couple races in the States, but I did go to a few junior international events.
Wow. How's that?
Yeah, they're pretty
intense.
Pretty intense, like kind of similar to going over to Europe for bike racing, but maybe kick it up a couple levels.
Really?
Like,
shit.
Yeah, the competition is just like so competitive, and yeah, they like you kind of got to be ready to step it up a few years.
So the hamstring is essentially what sort of pulled the skiing to a stop.
Yeah, like pretty much.
Transitioned away from it. Huh. Is it true that you had another injury condition that you were dealing with that may have contributed to the skiing sort of thing as well, stopping?
Yeah, well, I've had the brain tumor prolactinoma that I had to kind of deal with, or I've been dealing with.
Right.
So that all kind of like was, yeah, that was like a huge contributing factor. Like that was just making kind of racing at a high level skiing just like super tough, but obviously I could like ski with it. So I was,
what made it tough?
Mainly that it delayed my sort of growth and development. So I was just way kind of behind, like size wise compared to the people I was competing with.
Right.
And skiing being like a shorter kind of, you know, only like 1 minute.
Right.
Pretty powerful gravity sport. Being like really small isn't not like a whole lot of advantages there. But yeah. I was pretty like, I definitely was like committed, or in 2018, like I went to Sweden to like a ski academy, and I was committed to try and like wait it out, I guess you could say, and keep like developing and sort of keep going with it. But then like the hamstring thing kicked in, and that was just like the last straw. Like, I just couldn't do it. So that's where I just like kind of spring of 2018, I was like, I'm like racing like full on, like get me a bike and we're gonna go for it full gas, which went okay. I like did a race and then broke my collarbone like 2 weeks later, so then dealing with that most of the summer. And yeah, it's been like a tough few years sort of dealing with injuries that come with mountain biking, and like they just, when you break something, like you're out for a bit, so it's not ideal, like missing events, kind of missing opportunities to sort of show what you got.
Yeah. Yeah. You've had somewhat of a limited run to really prove what you've got, right? Like,
yeah.
Because of the injuries and stuff.
Yeah. And it seems to like, I guess in skiing, you have like your sort of ranking, And one race can like change that ranking by like a lot. Like you only, right. like you kind of, you're based on this like point system, and those points are what basically decide how good of a skier you are. Huh. Whereas in bike racing, you kind like you kind of have that, but like you don't really like you do good at a race, but like people decide that like it wasn't as good as it was, or like it's sort of it's based on people's and companies' like perception a little bit more, right. versus like, well, that's like you're on this list because you did that well, sort of thing.
Right.
So until you're racing at the EWS elite level or downhill World Cup, like it's really hard to kind of prove to people like exactly where you are. Like you get kind of like an idea doing other races, but
mm-hmm.
in a way people don't like really care. They're like, oh, well, let's see what you actually do at a real race, which is kind of tough sometimes, when it'd be cooler if, yeah, people could sort of, the ranking system works really well because you could go to like any race and then you'd get like a certain amount of points from like that race.
Right. It's not just that EWS race or whatever the equivalent is.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. So do you, like last year you kind of blew up when you had quite a few short video edits and stuff go out, especially on Instagram, and people started to really see that you had some skills on the bike. Do you think that helped, even though like there wasn't much? Well, there was, you did the Crankworx Summer Series and killed it at that too last year. But that came on the back of all those video edits where you were already building a name. Do you think that contributes to people and maybe your situation now with Yeti believing that you've got what it takes or may have what it takes without the race results to sort of, or the ton of points behind it to prove it?
Yeah, I think those videos definitely helped. They weren't, like, I definitely, like, want to, like, focus on racing, and that's kind of where my 100% focus is, and kind of show, I guess, value through racing,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not, like, I like doing the videos and doing all that stuff, but I don't like that taking, like, priority over...
Right.
The racing. So for example, last year we weren't racing, there wasn't much going on. I was like, well, like what can I kind of do? And I really didn't have like a big following at the time, and I was like, okay, well, if I can get like one video that kind of like takes one or two, like, well, before I did them, I was like, if I can get one video that kind of gets reshared and bumped around, like I can, that can like really
show some value
kind of, well, yeah, and it can like boost like your following by like so much, like just been like seeing other people kind of get that. So yeah, it actually, like a lot of the videos ended up doing really well, but there was one on like a pretty easy section of trail, which is kind of funny, like wasn't like anything super gnarly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just like kind of exploded, like I didn't really expect much of it, kind of thing. So that's what like really got my social media going, I guess,
huh.
which was really nice because I was getting like company, like people kind of saying like, oh, like, you really got to get your Instagram growth up, kind of thing. And I was almost just getting like annoyed. I was like, well, like, okay, like I got, like, I want, like, I need that to go up, but I don't, it's like annoying to have to like focus on it. So it's nice to kind of, obviously I want to like keep it growing and stuff, but it's nice to not be like struggling with it, I guess, now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you're a young racer, and I would say fit the demographic for where most people are like all about the social media, you got the bloody TikToker kids and all this stuff. But you're still primarily focused on your racing. You're like, from talking to you and sort of seeing your social media and that, you're definitely more focused on racing. You don't, it doesn't seem, correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem that if you didn't have to care about the social media, you would just ditch it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, I think, I mean, I'm being younger, yeah, in the younger like generation, like I don't mind, like I like posting, like showing videos and stuff, but there's like a difference between posting a video that you're proud of and you like want to share versus like stuff that is just for sponsors and stuff,
just to keep it going.
Yeah, and I mean it's fine, like you need both sides of it. I think it's just, it's tough as a racer when people are talking like, oh well, like you don't even really need to race, like you can just post some content and like that's like more value kind of thing. So it'll be interesting where that'll kind of plays out in the next few years, I feel like, because it's pretty new. And even this year, I feel like the content, now that racing's back, it almost like there's always another video, but like every race is like different and there's a new story and something new exciting happens.
Yeah.
Whereas like the video just start getting so repetitive, like,
yeah,
another person slashes a corner, like, yeah, yeah. Sick.
Yeah, it is repetitive for sure. And everyone sees someone else's kind of thing that did well and they try and emulate that. And it's just that perpetual cycle for sure.
Yeah, there's nothing that proves equipment and a rider's speed like the clock. So
yeah, for sure. It is a different level, hey?
Yeah.
Like even if you go as fast as you can on a trail at home and then there's a race down that trail, do you reckon you'd go heaps quicker?
I think... So when you do a video, yeah, I think you would go faster. It's where in like a video or a little section, like you might hit it 10 times and it's only a 2 second clip. But yeah, if you're going to race like a 3 minute track, like there's no way you're going to ride it as fast as you do in a race.
Yeah.
Like so, some of the moments like in Latuil, like, you know, like not even trying to. Sometimes you're not even trying to like open it up, but like you're tired and you just like get offline a bit and you're just hanging on for like everything you got. But like if it wasn't a race, you'd probably just like be in the weeds or like pull off or something. So
what is it about racing that gets you so fired up? Like you've been doing it for like how old were you when you started ski racing?
Like 10, I guess you could say. Oh. But I did some, yeah, like I've been kind of competing, I guess, since I was like 5 or 6.
BMX?
Yeah, I got into like a bit of BMX and then I was playing soccer and hockey
and
all kinds of ways to compete. Yeah. I think I just like racing, like just competing against other people and trying to beat them basically.
You've got like a, there's a lot of psychology that goes into racing. So, and people seem to really, I mean, it can make or break racers' careers. They just can't wrap their head around the focus needed or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Do you find that you're challenged by that, or is it pretty easy for you to deal with, maybe because you've been racing for so long?
Yeah, I think I'd say I'm still challenged by it quite a bit. Like it's not something that's super easy. Like some people seem to be able to just, it's like a non-issue, but I think if you care enough, there's no way of it like not being like a factor. It's just how you can kind of deal with it and like when like the time comes to actually like putting down your race run or whatever it is, you can actually kind of compete at your or ride at your best. So I think the experience that I've sort of had over the last number of years has really helped. Like I've said it kind of before, like riding bikes, like you don't actually like race that much. Like there's 9 EWS races on the calendar this year. Gonna do a national race in a couple of weeks here. Like that's only 10 races. Like obviously some people do a few more, but like in skiing you're doing 30, 35 starts a year plus all the like kind of fun mock races you do in training, like with timing and stuff, which isn't like the same, but if you compare it to like riding, like we basically almost never do that. Like there's not really a good reason for that, but maybe like I think the sport will like go there as things get more competitive and you need to be more at your like absolute best.
Yeah.
But yeah, just even like as soon as like you put a timer on something, like the mental sort of game like completely switches from just riding and like, oh, you kind of screwed up. You like, you know, you just kind of might get frustrated for a second, but you forget about it. But like once you have to like own your time, that it just like completely changes things. So.
Yeah. Huh. So with that much ski racing experience, that's got to have had a positive impact on how you approach a race weekend on your bike.
Yeah, for sure. I think like the skiing, with that much racing, like you get so much trial and error of like, oh, that like didn't really work. And like, oh, why did that like work so well? And you know, it's always a moving kind of puzzle that you're sort of trying to piece together. But, I think one thing is like ski race is pretty short.
Mm.
And a bike race is like ski race 1 minute-ish, give or take, like a short stage in a enduro is like 2.5, like under 3 minutes basically. So the intensity is kind of, it like kind of drops off. Like even though you're pinning it in a mountain bike race, the intensity is just not there. Like if it was on 1 minute track and a, on a bike, like you would definitely like up the intensity, like you would be sprinting out of like every corner possible. Right. Whereas now you like hit a corner, you might like, if you carry good speed out, you'll just kind of like chill. Right. So there's like those little differences that I think brings just a bit of comfort and confidence. Cause I'm like, okay, well I've been able to like nail lots of runs skiing that are like short and like, can't make like any mistakes. So then kind of try and bring that sort of mindset over to mountain biking.
Yeah, right. You mentioned earlier your growth being stunted by the tumor. Did that have any sort of repercussions when it came to racing bikes? Like how big are you? 5'9", 5'8"?
Yeah, I'm like just under 5'8", 172 centimeters.
Okay. So pretty normal.
Yeah.
So did it literally just slow it and you've still grown to normal size, would you say?
Yeah, like last year, I think I still like grew like a little bit.
Really? Eh?
Which I think you're 18 or 19, you typically like don't grow anymore. So
right.
Kind of shows that something's a little different.
Yeah.
The main thing is, I'd say, like, putting on kind of some muscle mass and getting stronger, like...
For power on the bike.
Yeah, and just, like, overall kind of strength, like, as one thing is, like, injury prevention, then just being able to, like, muscle the bike around easily.
Yeah.
So, like, I work really hard on that, but I feel like a lot of times it doesn't really show that I'm putting in a lot of effort. Like I just don't really put on a lot of mass. So
yeah.
Like I work really hard for it for like pretty small gain, but it's still
beneficial.
It's still like it was getting really unmotivating in skiing where I wasn't doing that well and I was like training really hard. Whereas now when I know I can do well, it's like a lot more motivating to still push through. And like even though I'm not getting the gains as someone else might, like I'm still getting something and kind of can keep pushing through for that. One thing that wasn't like that beneficial in skiing is I've always been like really naturally aerobically fit. Huh. So I haven't had to like put much effort into that like whatsoever. And that's actually really beneficial for enduro. So that's where enduro kind of suits my body type like a lot better. So it's just kind of a better fit.
Yeah. How did you approach that? Are you looking at the fact that you can't gain the mass that maybe you'd prefer to have? Is there an approach where you're focused on skills or something like that to help sort of fill the voids or anything like that?
Not really. Like, I think I focus on skills quite a bit compared to like a lot of people. I think instead of like shying away from the weaknesses, just try and strengthen my weakness as much as I can and then keep the strength strong is sort of where I'm always at, instead of like just strengthening your strengths and kind of like forgetting about your weaknesses. It's easier said than done, but it's pretty easy to do. Like, it'd be pretty easy for me to just ride a bunch and like be super like strong endurance wise, but not have much strength and power. And like, I'd do fine, but I'd be missing that extra bit of speed that is kind of the difference between getting some good results and being kind of out the back. So.
Yeah. What's a weakness in the skill side that you've focused on in the last couple of years that's really helped?
Well, I focused a lot on cornering. I don't know if it was really like a big weakness, but I just like,
you want it to be better.
Yeah. And it's pretty easy to like kind of just ride. It's pretty easy to ride your bike without really knowing like why you're doing certain things or what you're doing. You just get on the thing and go kind of. And skiing being such a technical sport, I was like, okay, well, there's some things here that I could definitely like do better. I don't know what that is or what I need to do, but I somehow managed to have a few skills that I was just naturally doing correct, which is nice. Like, not rebuilding my entire technique or anything, but just focusing on like kind of the basic things of what actually gives you a good platform through the corners was a big focus. Like, especially last year where we weren't really like racing.
Yeah.
I just feel like corner speed is where the races are kind of won or lost. Like, you're hitting so many corners in a trail, and they sort of decide like how much speed you're sort of carrying overall, plus like efficiency wise. Like, if
you're,
I was
gonna say, how much you conserve.
Yeah, like, it's huge if you're carrying good speed out of a corner, you don't really pedal too hard, hit another one, versus like coming in a little hard on the brakes, like sprinting out. Like, now you've just like spiked your heart rate and you haven't even like gotten to a sprinty section. So like, those little differences can be so big over like a 5 minute track.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So lots of cornering drills. I mean, cone drills.
Yeah. Not much this year, just where I'm between the injuries. It's like, okay, now I need to like just ride. And then like, I haven't had like that time to like focus a bit broader, but definitely done like a little bit. Even just like when you get on like a easy flow trail, just instead of just ripping down and not like thinking at all what you're doing, like, it's a good, because there's so much support, it's like a good place to like focus on what you're actually doing and like putting like where you're putting your pressure and stuff, and try and have like good technique, because it's just way too hard to think about it when like you're going down a techie track and you know every corner is different, and like there's too much going on to like think about what you're doing with your right heel.
Yeah. You get into all the little bits, like, what are my toes doing now?
Yeah. Like, you just can't, like, you're just trying to keep yourself on the track. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're really training the skill to be, someone at your level. You're more just checking in, aren't you, to see if everything's still where it should be. And
a little bit, like, there's a few things that I like to, that I don't feel like I do super well. So like, focus on it's pretty, I don't naturally like drop my heels into corners. Like, I'll kind of just keep them sort of level. Yeah. Whereas it's like a huge difference if you can like drop your heels into corners, especially as soon as it's like a bit steeper. Like, it makes a huge difference on like getting back wheel traction and stuff. So that's one thing that, like, if I'm just cruising down like an easy berm track, like, I'll actually like focus on
doing it.
Yeah.
Do you find, or do you think that skill, I guess, development or focusing on your skills is something every professional rider does or should do? Like,
yeah, I think it's getting more and more as like the level gets risen and people are trying to find areas they can be faster, and it kind of comes back to like, oh, well, like, I actually could just be in a better position here, and that would like improve, because it's really easy to like look past that and like just try and go faster and be stronger and fitter. And it's like one area that I don't think has been focused on too much in mountain biking that I think is there's being more attention being brought to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Like in the last couple of years, but it's not a super technical sport. So like, that's kind of the reason, like, some of the things are pretty, like, they're not easy to do perfect, but at the same time, they're pretty basic and like easy to do, like decent, like kind of good enough to kind of get past. Like, it's not going to like change your world necessarily. If you like, if I go through a corner and drop my heels a bit more than I don't, but it'll definitely make a difference. So it's like those little differences that you're looking forward to.
Every little thing you can get right. Every little nanosecond and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So you're home for a short stint, I guess down to the US for just one race? Is it just the one you didn't do down there?
Yeah, with like the US quarantine rules, I wasn't able to go to the race in Big Sky, unfortunately. I was pretty bummed out because that race is really good. I was there last year and trails are super good. So missed that one, but I'll be able to go to the one in Winter Park. And then we go to Europe like pretty quick after, like, I think like within like a week or so. So
okay,
not much downtime there.
Yeah. What's what are the next rounds in Europe?
So there's a double header in Ludenville, France.
Okay.
Which I've never raced in France. Like, I don't know. Kind of just for like whatever reason missed the ones that are in France for various reasons. So
what have you heard about racing in France?
I've heard that it's like it's like Italy but harder pretty much. Everything you thought was tough, it's just not tough anymore until you go to
France. Huh.
But who knows? Like, I mean, they, you know, it's a big, there's a lot of different areas. Like, not all the riding will be the same, but I think in general, they make the races pretty technical and tough, which I think I'm pretty excited about. Like, I think that'll like suit me pretty well. So not too like worried, but definitely interesting to see what that looks like.
Yeah. And then where is it after that?
It's Crans, Montana, Switzerland.
Okay.
And then we're going to Finale.
So there's another three. Is it three or are they all double headers?
So that's four.
Four.
They're not. It's just the Ludenville's a double.
Oh. So Ludenville's a double, then the next two rounds after that.
Yeah. There is one in Scotland on the schedule for the beginning of October.
Okay.
Which, yeah,
we'll see. The Tweed Valley one, right?
Yeah. I'm like, I'd really like to go there. Like, some people don't seem super excited, but I've like the videos I've seen and stuff, like the riding looks pretty fun.
Yeah.
So I'd be stoked, but I know they're kind of, England's got some weird rules going on. So
with COVID stuff,
we'll just have to see how that plays out. Like, hopefully things kind of settle down. Like, it is still a couple months away, so
yeah,
could change quite a bit.
What do you think of the doubleheader weekends? Are you for them, against them? Doesn't matter.
I think they're great. Like, we're already there. Like, might as well race twice. Like, it,
yeah.
like get two races in one week versus like only doing one race in the week.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing which I wasn't really expecting was we kind of raced the same tracks for both races.
Right.
Which was kind of disappointing. Like it would have been nice to have two separate races. Like basically, yeah, we'd do one practice for two races.
Right.
Latuil got changed. They made some changes a bit just to make it a little different, which was good. Like not a lot different, but a couple stages just had some like different sections and stuff, which was nice. So it was, yeah, it definitely was freshen up and, I don't think it was their plan, but just with weather at the first race, which we still ended up in, they're trying to miss a storm. So they shortened a couple stages. So then we raced those upper sections for the second race. So
Switch
it up a bit.
Huh. Doubleheaders into it. Do you find the fact you're racing twice so short of time challenging at all? I guess you said your anaerobic system's pretty solid, so.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely were feeling pretty worked by the end of the week, but yeah, I thought it was good. Like, you know, we got a day off, like, in between, so it wasn't just every day doing big days. Like, I feel like we got enough rest, and like the pro stage day still like intense, like doing a race, but
it's just one lap.
Like we did a practice lap and then race lap, so it wasn't like it wasn't a mega day or anything. That's where it was nice to not be trying to deal with my bike as far as wrenching on and stuff, because we'd finish at like 5 and then racing like pretty early the next morning. So that's where that kind of stuff really comes in handy.
What happens on that rest day in between? What did you guys get up to?
Not much. Went for like a little ride.
Get some gelato.
Sat in the river. Yeah.
So you did get out on the bike, just casual.
Yeah, in Canada, I think I just chilled and was resting like my wrists and stuff, but
yeah.
Latuil, did a little spin on the road. Like both of those locations, there wasn't like a ton of trails. So like outside of the race, it was kind of hard to do much riding. They
took everything they had.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that. Like you went to Europe pretty close to your wrist surgery.
Yeah.
You had a brace on. How did that go though? You felt all right?
Yeah, the injury wasn't really holding me back at all. It was more the time that it had taken, like, that it had me off my bike. Because it was, like, what was it? It was like, well over 12 weeks total.
Of no bike?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was quite a bit.
What do you do during that time to try and keep some sort of fitness going?
I was doing a lot of hiking.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing some... trying to do some cheap laps.
Laps?
Well, not laps.
Are you timing yourself up there?
Yeah. once a week for a few weeks there, I was like trying to go pin, and then I realized I actually need to do some running if I wanted to go faster, because like just didn't have that. Like my power hiking was pretty good, but
yeah, like, as soon as the pace got
no
up.
Running legs whatsoever. But I wanted to do some running, but I was told like the vibrations weren't like a great idea
for the wrist,
for a broken bone.
Wow.
So like I was trying to like not run and do everything I could. Turned out the bone didn't heal anyway, so could have been running as much as I wanted, but
yeah.
And then I got wrist surgery, and then they're like, oh well, you can actually just pretty much start like strengthening it and going on the road bike right away. So then I just kind of got into that group.
It's pretty crazy. They give you surgery and they're like, yeah, like braced, but you can get back on your bike and get going.
Yeah, it's just once the bone's like stabilized, it's way safer to kind of do more activity. Whereas when it's sort of just in there doing its thing, like then any kind of movement can sort of disrupt the healing. So
right. Huh. Cool. How's it feeling now? Are you 100%? Are you still wearing a brace?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to... plan is to like wear double wrist braces now, kind of permanently. Right. Just... I actually did it when I was younger as a kid, racing BMX, and then...
Had you had an injury then, or that was just like mom and dad wanting you to be safe?
It started from a broken wrist, and then
okay.
It was just a might as well sort of thing. Like, so I'm going to... and continue on with that just as a safety precaution. Like, they're definitely not foolproof in any way, and they can kind of, they can almost like kind of like the neck brace where like it sort of almost like makes it easier to break your collarbone. Like, it's definitely easier to break your arm because you're like bracing the wrist. Yeah. So like the arm can take the load, but it's just, it's so bad on the, like the, there's so much force going through the wrists for riding, and like any kind of little inflammation or joint pain there, and it just like is so uncomfortable. So my dad was like, well, it's a lot better to break your arm than your wrist, so
yeah,
keep you off your wrist then. Yeah, because like I broke my left wrist 4 times now. So
wow, that was what you just did then too, same wrist?
Yeah, like, yeah, left this, wrist. Yeah. Yeah,
crazy. So double wrist braces.
Yeah, that'll be, he'll be seeing me in some, I'm getting some new ones ordered that are like pretty custom, so that'll be cool. Like,
yeah,
fit pretty well,
yeah,
hopefully. So yeah, I think I wear more protection than most people, but I mean, I'm also, yeah, it's like one of those ones where people are like, well, what are you doing wearing all this protection? And then they're like, what are you doing getting injured? It's like,
yeah,
I'm trying to like prevent that as much as possible. So
yeah,
like,
I think it's smart. Yeah, I'm always surprised that you see like athletes that do, or riders that have broken wrists, you know, more than once, and they're not wearing anything. It's kind of, most guys that you see who've had some sort of ankle injury, they run an ankle brace. Like,
yeah,
they don't just ignore it. But.
And like my wrist now, like, as far as the bone's concerned, like with the surgery, like it,
it's
like
solid.
I guess you like can't even, like the bone, like, is like basically impossible to re-break with the pin in there. So it's not really to prevent like re-breaking it. It's more the like soft tissue, just that, like, mm-hmm, to give it a bit more support. And I think it almost like gives a bit of confidence as well, having like something on there. Mm-hmm. You like feel better about it. Not
yeah,
that it necessarily is like doing much. Like, the, I was using a lot of tape over in Europe, which honestly...
On the other wrist or both?
On the, like, on the one I'd broken.
Right.
Which was doing more than the brace, really. Because
really?
The tape kind of gives you that, like, it's the quick, like, kind of movement that makes it really sore.
Right.
So, like, the tape sort of, like, slows it down. Because the brace kind of only, it only really stops you at, like, the end points. It doesn't really, like, slow down the movement.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was like, it took me like the first couple of days, Richie and Sean were just like, wouldn't even, I was like not even close to ready when we were going to go. Like, they're kind of over
up.
It. Yeah. Like, it took me a while cause I had the ankle as well. So I was like taping the ankle brace, tape the wrist brace.
Yeah. Are you taping yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you know what you're doing, I guess. Someone's shown you.
Yeah, like a physio showed me how to tape my ankle, and then the wrists, will kind of watch some YouTube and learn what sort of works. It's pretty simple. Like, you just need to like put strips of tape the length of like over the top of the area that's sore, just to like,
yeah.
So yeah, kind of learned, just looked it up online. Like, there's lots of stuff.
So you just need a little more time than them to get ready. You start early.
Yeah. I had to learn pretty quick. It take me like quite a while. I got faster at it too, but
yeah.
And as the wrists like felt better, I didn't have to put like quite as much tape on, because the first like the first week, it was like half a roll of tape almost. Like, it was
no way,
so much.
Wow, it's gonna put that in your budget.
Yeah.
What's your goals for this next stint, this next block of racing?
I think, like, I mean, I'd like to just kind of continue on from Latuil, like, just, I think being in the top 10 really as my goal consistently is would be really nice. Like, I mean, long shot goal would be to find my way onto the podium. Like,
that'd be sick.
I think I have the speed to do it. Like, there's just about putting together like the best race I can and having some things maybe go my way and just putting good races together that I'm happy with is really the goal. Like, if I'm 12th with a really good race, can't really be bummed about that. Like, for example, in Latuil, I got the second race, 13th. Like, I mean, I just had I had some good stages, but I had some real big mistakes that I was just kind of they were just unnecessary. Like, right. The pro stage, I tucked the front end, I got kind of tangled in my bike, so then I was kind of already out the back starting the next day. And then somehow I had one of those runs where it just was kind of nice and smooth, but I didn't think much of it. Thought it might be a bit slow, and I was ninth. I was sick, okay, just need to keep doing that for the day. And then that was my best stage of the day. Next stage kind of just struggled. So, but yeah, being consistently fast is just really key.
Yeah. What about long term? Where do you, you're still pretty young, you're just kind of getting going. What do you want to do out of it as a career or anything?
Yeah, I'd like to get the overall Enduro World Series number one plate, I guess, is that's kind of the biggest title in Enduro.
Yeah.
I'd like to race both disciplines eventually. I think it's pretty cool, the guys doing both.
Like downhill as well?
Yeah, because in skiing, there's only a few guys that only do one discipline. It's pretty normal that you do at least two. Some people are doing three or four. So
wow,
I guess I'm kind of used. I was always doing at least two, and then kind of a third. So it's not that weird for me to be doing two. And get to race more and stuff. Unfortunately, they don't put much. They basically put zero effort in making the calendars kind of.
Yeah,
blend together. It'd be cool to see them work together a little bit there to make them work, because it's pretty tough if you're some of the guys did the doubleheader, went to Leger, raced Leger, and then came back and did a doubleheader.
It's a lot
heavy week, but at least you could do it, where some of them, they're just on the same week. It's what are you gonna do with it? You have to choose, so yeah. That kind of sucks, but yeah, I don't see myself doing that right away here, or next year or anything, but I think
you'd like
in the future, yeah, I'd like to really have a good crack at it next year in the Enduro, now getting some experience and first kind of proper season under the belt since last year, didn't get to do any EWS elite stuff, so.
Yeah, you had to stay local last year, didn't you? Do you think if you cracked it open and started having an awesome year and you were able to do both, you would just focus on the one that you were doing awesome on? Jack's kind of doing that now. I think he ditched Leger because he was doing so well.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough call. I think that's kind of one you got to make in the moment of across a few factors. If you haven't really had much time on one of the bikes and you're kind of a bit unsure, whereas if you're feeling good and confident, I don't know, I don't know.
At the time.
It's a on the fly decision, I guess, but yeah, definitely, you definitely see people doing that, I'm doing well at this, I'm just gonna stick with it.
Yeah,
I definitely see why you would do that.
That's cool. I didn't know you were interested in the downhill racing stuff.
Yeah, I think naturally going from skiing is you'd go to downhill. That's the most, they're actually really similar in the format and everything. But it was more of Enduro. I only had one bike for a while there, and I still kind of only have the one Enduro bike.
Yeah.
But that was the bike I was riding. So then it just was a natural fit to go into that style of racing than trying to get a whole different bike to do another kind of a different kind of race. So
yeah,
that's why I sort of stuck with that.
I'll wrap it up on a question from your Instagram today. Do you really find racing and riding in Europe is easier with the smaller cassette? So for the listeners, Casper rides a 1051. Is that what the regular Shimano cassette is?
I think that's what most people ride. Yeah. Yeah. That's,
you ride that here in Squamish.
Yeah.
And then overseas you ride a 10, what is it? A 1048 or something?
1045. It's not because of the gearing.
What is it?
It's just so you get the derailleur cage is way shorter on the 45. Right. So yeah. it's kind of more out of the way, like less chance of blowing up on rocks. Like
wrecking a weekend.
Whereas, so it's just a little comfort there. And like the gearing is really tight.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have like big jumps around, but it's definitely a bit of a grind on the climbs. In enduro too, like a lot of the races, like you end up walking a lot of stuff that if you're just going for a ride, like you wouldn't you just grind it out. But our climbs are so steep around here too, and over there you get a lot of pavement, which is just way easier to climb on, whereas you got like grindy fire roads here. I found Squamish is not like too bad on it, like King.
Yeah, you were running it a while back, right?
Yeah, it's not too bad, but like as soon as I've been trying to ride a bit more in Whistler and stuff, and as soon as you're in like Whistler to Pemberton, like any climb pretty much is just the steepest fire road you can think of. So like the 10 to 51 doesn't even feel like easy or anything. It's like feels the same as like the 10 to 45 in most places. Like when I switched it and like the next ride I did like the steep fire road in Pemberton, and I was like, did I even like switch the cassette?
Did I forget
like,
to do it?
Yeah.
That's cool. Okay. With that, we'll end it. Thanks, Casper.
Yeah, sweet. Thank you.
Cheers. That brings us to the end of our conversation with Casper Woolley and the first episode of the Coming of Age series. If you made it this far, thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen and let us know your thoughts. You can also check nsmb.com for regular mountain bike content. We'll be back soon with another episode for your listening pleasure.